Hello, hello. Welcome to the expansive world of cis society, where we fearlessly embrace taboos around sensuality, intimacy, and sexuality and dive into the shadow. This is Taboo Talks, where no topic is off limits. Join us as we expand our compassion and embrace our shadows, uniting us with it all. And today we are sliding into a brand new topic, money. Money, money, money. And money is responsible for access, influence, opportunity. It shapes our choices, drives innovation, and fuels ambition. And at the same time, it's also responsible for inequality, pressure, and sometimes even greed. In essence, money holds the keys to both freedom and control, depending on our relationship to it. It is a taboo force for sure, and it is not just paper. It's pure and potent energy capable of shifting our reality. And we are here to meet it with curiosity, compassion, and maybe even a new take. And here to usher us into this very exciting topic, we're joined by the lovely Daniel Levy. Daniel is an investor and expert in Bitcoin security. He is also an entrepreneur who runs the community currency platform villages.io. Welcome to the show, Daniel.
Thank you for having me, Heather and Alfina. Happy to be here.
Yeah, you're welcome for having you. I'm excited for this conversation. So, yeah, I'd love to just jump in by kind of asking you about your personal relationship to money. Later, I would love to get more into what you've built. But I just feel really curious as to what led you here. So my question to kick it off is, what is money to you, and what is your relationship to it?
Sure. So I'll start growing up. Growing up, I, grew up in the United States, and my dad's a father's professional. So I mean, I it was never something that was I feel blessed to never I never had like a poverty life, and I always had all my needs met and food on the table and loving family and feel supported. As I got older, my relationship with money did change, and I started, I viewed like the dollar, and I had maybe rebellious view where I kind of like saw the dollar as maybe like a evil empire thing. And I thought, oh, this is blood money. It's backed by just oil and greed and interest, and the people that create it are the ones that control it and get it. And I actually went through a period of my life where I was like trying not to use money at all. Where I would like my living situation was I was doing work trade and staying in a tent at a community. Communal kitchen. A lot of our food came from like dumpster diving and things like that, right? And I was really just like trying to avoid get out of the money world. Wasn't, I would work for fun and for pleasure and do work exchanges, but I was like really working to avoid money, right? And I had like a oh, this is like a bad or like money's evil, the root of all evil kind of attitude around it. So diving into that world, I started to do lots of trades. Started, I love the like gift economy. They say Burning Man, for example, they say is kind of run with like a gift economy where it's like you go giving, you go with the spirit of giving as much as you can, and everybody else around you like feels that and reciprocates, right? So it's like more of like a giving and like a giving mentality, and people are just sharing in abundance. I love that very much, and I think like traditional, I believe traditional societies had more of that mentality. You know, people have an abundant harvest and they share it with their neighbors. And when their neighbor has an abundant harvest, they, of course, share it with them. When your neighbor needs help, you know, you run over and help them. And when you need help, your neighbor comes and helps you. And money wasn't even necessarily a thing. You know, it was just like, you know, all your community, you know that they're good for it. I mean, sure, people aren't helping out. Maybe they get ostracized or they're not as included in this, you know, circuit of sharing, right? But yeah, I think traditional societies mostly just were, you know, people shared their abundance and, you know, people just reveled in the harvest together, and people were not necessarily left out of the tribe, right? Of course, in modern society, does that mentality scale? It's kind of hard to scale, you know, when we don't know the people that are living right next door to us anymore, right? It's like you know, the people that live closest to you, you might not even know their names anymore. You go to the store and you don't know the name of the, you know, person who's running the store. So yeah, modern society, we need to have checks and balances, right? And money is a great tool. I mean, pay, for example, the word pay comes from the, I learned it, you know, the etymology of the word pay is pax, which means peace. So it's like a way to create peace and avoid violent conflict, right? So yeah, money, you know, instead of people just going to war and battling and like taking over each other's resources and, I don't know, killing them for it. Nowadays, we can, you know, offer payment and say, hey, we need extra resources. Can we like give, you know, we pay you in this, you know, in this money, right? So it's really a way to create peace in our agreements. Money is a method for to encourage collaboration. If we don't have a good money to use, it makes collaboration really, really difficult. You know, not everybody has you know, what you have to share. They might not even know you, right? But you might need some specific skill sets that you can't do yourself. We can't do anything as an individual. We can't really accomplish great things on our own. We need to collaborate with others. A great example of that I love is the pencil. You know, like they say, the standard pencil, you know, with its wood, it's the lacquer around the wood, the graphite inside the wood, the eraser, the little metal that holds the eraser on to the pencil. Like every part of a pencil comes from a different region. And they say that no one nation can create a pencil on its own. Like a pencil, it takes global cooperation and global collaboration. You know, whether it's the rubber, you know, the machine to carve the pencil, you know, all of it, it takes, you know, a thousand different little pieces and like a thousand different parts to make it, you know, this most simple thing that we use in our life. Yeah, it takes global cooperation and collaboration to create it. I just think that's incredible. And yeah, I'll say, like, you know, my relationship with money nowadays is you know, definitely more I have more peace with the dollar. You know, I use the dollar in my life for sure. You know, I earn dollars, I spend dollars, I save dollars. I like to invest in all kinds of things. I like to invest in stock market, and I like to invest, you know, I own property, and Bitcoin is something that we'll talk about too. But I like to invest in lots of normal type of you know, modern investment vehicles, and I'm really grateful for them. And I think it's amazing that we can create, you know, we as a collective and pool our money together behind some confident and like inspired entrepreneurs and create things like the iPhone that I'm using right now to have this conversation with y'all, and Zoom and YouTube, and just all these things are just really modern miracles that wouldn't be possible if it wasn't for global collaboration and global cooperation and people all over the world believing in these ideas and investing in them together to make them happen. So, I am generally an optimist. I think I see our world and culture getting more and more abundant, more and more prosperous with time. Of course, you can look at obvious things like birth rate, and infant, death rates, and see how much that improves. But like quality of life, just having running water in our houses is like such a miracle that 100 years ago, only the wealthiest people had access to that. And that, modern healthcare, communication, and refrigeration. Oh my God. Wow. We're so blessed.
Yeah, no, I love this gratitude rant right now. It's so beautiful, heart opening. But
We're so blessed. A lot of people are kind of technophobic, and but really our world, even those people use their cell phones every day, and our world is getting more and more prosperous every day. Even the poorest of people on the planet have access to more resource and food and health, sanitation and things like that than even the wealthiest people did like 100 years ago. So
yeah, as our consciousness expands, so does the consciousness of money, because it's ultimately the same thing. And I love your story, because it's touched on the duality of money, right? Through your own experience, like you grew up in a home where, like, you didn't really think about money, and then you were thrust into the world where you met money initially through the density of it, right? Where you were like, money is a villain, money is greedy, money is bad. To then transmuting that and remembering that for you, money in the highest form is collaboration, is connection, is peace. And I love that so much. I didn't know that pay meant peace. That's really, really freaking cool. And yeah, I think, like, what's th my next question through what you shared is just like, with where we are now, right now on the planet, like, what is next in the evolution of money, and how do we get there? And potentially, maybe this ties into villages and what you've built. But yeah, I'm just curious, like, what you see the future of our relationship to money being.
Well, a lot of unknowns, I'll say that. Especially like with AI and automation, things like that. It's like I'm hopeful that we'll come to a world where where nobody is in poverty. That's I would love to see that happen within my lifetime, and I think it's quite likely, honestly. Or in a post-scarcity world where all our material needs can be potentially met. There's always things that are gonna have a scarce value though. Things like people's time, an expert's time, or spending time with learning a skill from an individual who is famous or has inspired lots of people. Their time is always going to be valuable. It's always going to be something that is going to be scarce, so it's like our time is always scarce, right? So that's always going to be valuable, and it's always, and depending on who you are and what you do, it's likely something that will be sought after and desired by others, needed by others. In the future, there could be all kinds of different ways of saving money, of spending money, of using money, or like what money even is. I mean, right now we most of us use dollars or fiat money, which is really useful and easy. It's like, so everybody accepts it everywhere in the world. It's like the mo that's called fungibility, and it's amazing that we have this money that is universally fungible. And and it essentially control, there's of course benefits and pros and cons to that, but like if it's able to match our production capacity as a society, it can be really useful. And there's always concerns about inflation and, oh, is there more money than there is production capacity, and our national debt and things like that. And yeah, we've seen countries where their money has hyperinflation crisis, and their money, the money that people are saving in, maybe even for generations, just turns and totally becomes valueless. And that can be, it's, really sad and really, yeah, horrible, called crisis in society, cause power, poverty and, yeah, crisis. And yeah, that would be really, really horrible and sad to see happen to us or with the dollar. Let's see. Back, so the future of money is uncertain. Personally, I, yeah, and the dollar, it might work well for the world and for our nation for years to come. I certainly hope so, and I hope that we continue to prosper as a society. In the meantime, I am someone who prepares for resilience, and some of the tools that I see useful, I mean, the of are finding other means of doing exchange. Those, some of the tools that I found are, for example, villages.io is the platform that I run. I'm the director of that platform and community. And Bitcoin is also a magnificent tool for more so for savings and settlement. But there's lots of ways. Villages is really more of a local tool. It's a community currency platform, so it's for communities and individuals to create their own money. And it's a way to have less reliance and dependence upon government monies, and a way that we can be prepared as local communities to create our own money if needed or as needed. Bitcoin, on the other hand, is designed to be a savings. The dollar is designed to be inflationary and to go down in value over the years, which encourages spending. Bitcoin is actually the opposite. It's designed to go up in value, deflationary. It's designed to be something that people want to hold on to and store for a long time to come, for generations. And then community currency kind of meets us in the middle, where it's like it's generated as needed amongst your small community. It's also inflationary, but it's accessible, and anybody can, again, you can create as much as you need as needed. And it's not centrally created by a central bank or federal or government.
So can I
Yeah, the
interrupt you really
future of
quickly?
money,
Yeah.
God only knows what the future has in store,
Well, I
but
feel
I
like
think it's good to prepare with learning how to use resilient tools.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you this villages.io was coming up is I'm continuously redefining my relationship around money. And when you say, and so I would say I'm a newbie at it, like I'm a newborn. So if you were to explain villages.io to say like a child or to, I don't know, my grandma or my mom, like how would you break it down? Like where is the money coming from? Who's resourcing it? How is it being distributed? Like, I feel so curious about.
Sure. Well, yeah, I mean, it's, and I'll say there is a learning curve to creating your own money and to using like decentralized savings like Bitcoin. Both of them have a learning curve. But as you learn, it makes more and more sense. But it's let's say it's perfectly normal to not fully grasp it upon first learning, you know, and oftentimes it takes using it to, you know, get more a grasp on what we're doing and how this works. So villages, well, okay, so I'll start by explaining like what money is, you know, the dollar. 'Cause villages is really similar to the dollar. It's just a more of a democratized version of it. So money is all backed by credit. So if you go into a bank, and you get a loan to build a house, let's say, or start a business, that money is actually created by the bank. So the bank just they just add a number to your account. Boop. Okay. You know, you have a loan of $10,000. So they just add that number to your account. You have negative 10,000, right? You owe 10,000. You know, it's just a number. But that negative 10,000, you know, you have access to that, right? The same with a credit card, right? You go and you apply for a credit card and you get a $10,000 credit line, right? So you have access to that 10,000, but that money isn't like taken from somewhere else and given to you. No, it's created by you. Like the bank is creating that money on your behalf, right? So you got that $10,000. That money is created like when you get the loan, right? Or when you take out that credit. That's money that's created for you, right? And all money, like the dollar, is all created that way. So the dollar is all credit. And the reason it's valuable is because people like you want to pay back their loans, right? They want to make good on what they borrowed. So it's like that money is backed by you, right? It's backed by your willingness to accept it as money because you need to pay back your loan. You know, you have the obligation to be in good standing, right? So that's what money is, and that's what it's backed by. It's backed by us. It's backed by, yeah, our desire to be good on our obligations, right? So,
And also, like, the fact that we're going to be penalized if you don't pay it back. We're held, there's a responsibility, there's an accountability for paying it back.
that's right. Yeah, it's backed by the American public. The dollar is backed by the American people and their obligation to accept it to pay back their loans, right?
Well, I mean, I'm just thinking, like, dark, my dark feminine is coming out right now as you're, it's really, my mind is really being expanded. And like, man, it's really like opening up something. But like, you're saying that like this concept of money is built on the fact that we're good people, that we want to return the favor. But what if we just don't pay it back? Like, what is the penalty? Like, oh, we have a bad credit score, and then what? Like, can they legally arrest us if we don't pay our
No,
money? Okay.
no, I mean, with the dollar. No, it
Interesting.
affects your credit score. You know, if you do bankruptcy, then you can't create any more money for 7 years. You get a
It's like
seven
built on
year.
collective shame, basically.
Yeah, pretty much. And there's a lot of people that just play the system, and I mean that's part of it. But and like the wealthiest people don't even have, you know, they don't even use their own money. They just create money to use. And actually, that's like one of the founding principles of this country, of the United States. One of the founding principles is that you know, every individual has this like capability. And it used to be that individuals could just apply directly to, you know, create their own bond with the US government and get money directly through the government, right? But nowadays, only banks are able to issue money, and they do it on behalf of, I imagine people took advantage of it too much. So that role
There's so
was.
much fear that's like that's inbred in us. Like, you don't want a loan, you don't want debt. That's the worst thing ever. You're not going to be able to get a mortgage. You're not going to be able to get take a loan out on anything. I don't know. That was like impounded into my head so much that I don't even have a credit card now because of all the fear around debt. But in reality, we can create that money. Like, we don't have to like wait around for someone to pay us. We can pay ourselves.
Yeah, it's like money's a collective story, and we've all been like just agreeing to this collective story. I feel like, are you having the same epiphany that I'm having, Elfina?
Yeah, it's like this, it's made us all feel very disempowered. Like, we're not the create, we can't create our own wealth. And now I'm feeling like, oh, it's like I can create my own wealth, and I don't need to be so scared about doing that.
Well, I would like differentiate the term wealth. You know, it's like we I mean, wealth is more of store value, but like having access to capital is something like if you're in good standing, if you're a trustworthy peer person, you have a good reputation, you should have access to capital, and you should be able to create, you know, more benefit for society. Right. You know, John, and you want to prove that, like, not like with the banking system, you got to prove it with the bank. You know, you get a credit card and you pay your credit card back and you take your time building your credit score, right? But if you got a good credit score, then you got access to capital, and banks will trust you to create net benefit for society, right? To yeah, here's capital. Like and in different parts of the world that's different. Like and I'll say, like, in Muslim countries, for example, they are not allowed to do interest on loans. So they actually have they have their family clearinghouse. But it's like if you're connected to wealth, then you have access to wealth. You don't necessarily have to be wealthy to have access to that capital. Nowadays, you know, in our society, you know, we do that through credit score. Through them, it's more through family and friends, right? But I think some mix of the two, that's where Villages comes in. So it's like Villages uses social networks instead of legacy financial networks to create your own financial trust network. So instead of going through Visa and using Visa's network of credit, right? It's like, oh, I apply to Visa, they approve me for a $10,000 line of credit, you know, with interest, and I can use my Visa card anywhere in that Visa network, right? Which is pretty fungible, right? Like most places except Visa. So it's like that's a really strong financial network and really trustworthy, right? But what happens when we have hyper-connected social networks? Do we need that third party to connect us to their network, or can we create our own financial networks? So that's like where Villages comes in. Villages is about creating your own financial trust network, or we call it like a web of trust. So I trust you, Elfina, and Elfina, you trust Heather, right? So there's like a tether, a pathway to Heather. So we have a pathway of trust connecting us. See, I know Heather too, and I trust Heather too. But like pretending I don't, you know, we would have there's a pathway connecting us. So and on Villages, you set a maximum similar to a credit card. So it's like in Villages, everybody becomes a bank. So instead of applying to Visa to get a line of credit or to Chase Bank or whatever, you apply to me, right? So you say, oh, Danielle, can I have a line of credit from you? And it's like, sure. So I set your maximum, say, $1,000 or whatever, right? And then and you can't go over that. And then if you set a maximum with Heather, then there's a pathway that will route through you. And that's actually how banks work, right? It's like you have your credit line with your bank, and they have pathways to other banks. So they can route that money through your bank to another bank. And then at the end of the day, the end of the week or whatever, they clear all of the outstanding debt between them. Right.
Okay. And then how do people pay you back? So you trust me, I'm in the web of trustworthiness. And you're like, okay, I'm giving you a line of $5,000 today.
Yeah.
Then what happens?
Well, again, I'm not giving you $5,000. I'm giving you a credit line. So you're able to spend that much to me and within my network. It's basically saying, hey,
Do I owe you back that money since you're kind of standing as a bank essentially?
That's right.
And you charge credit as well too within the space of villages. Like you charge you charge interest.
On villages, there's no interest. Interest is not allowed in villages.
And just to be clear, that villages is like, can you explain more about how it works within local communities and how people can trade things beyond just money? It's not focused on the dollar bill. It's focused on.
So with this concept, you can do it with any unit of account. It's called transitive transactions is the style of currency. Or mutual credit. You can do mutual credit with any unit of account. You can do it with dollars. You can do it with gold. You can do it with Bitcoin. You can do it with quarts of honey. You can do it with eggs. I know there's a community in Northern Washington, and they have their own community currency, and their unit of account is eggs. And it's like a free range egg, right? So it's like maybe a dollar, right? Each free range egg is a dollar, right? And that's the unit of account they use. And it's basically just a unit of measurement, right? It's like, how do you measure this? How do we measure our time? How do we measure our value? On villages, we don't use dollars. We don't use eggs. We don't use Bitcoin. We use village hours. So a village hour is equivalent to a sustainable hour's wage for unskilled labor. So there's a couple of layers to villages. You know, the first thing is understanding how mutual credit works and understanding that, we're just exchanging balances and keeping track of our balance between each other and between our community. The other learning curve is understanding that, we're not using dollars. Dollars are... You know, we don't want to be stuck with the inflationary rate of the dollar. And after lots and lots of discussion in forums, this is actually a global community. We decided village hours are a sustainable and stable metric of value that anybody can relate to anywhere in the world. And it doesn't degrade in value. And it doesn't inflate in value. I wouldn't say it's a perfect unit of account, but it's a useful unit of account. And it's not an equal hour. My hour is not necessarily equal to the value of your hour. It's a sustainable hour's wage for unskilled labor. It's kind of like minimum sustainable wage in your community. So every community, that's a little different. Like here in my district on the Big Island, it's probably like $20, maybe $22, something like that. You know, or you go to San Francisco, it might be $30. Or you go to Tulum, and it's probably maybe more like $15 or $12, right? I don't know. That's up to you and your community. But personally, I like for my time as a... like building software and doing websites hosting or Bitcoin security technical support, I'll charge for software, for example, I charge like 3.5 village hours. For doing Bitcoin security work, I charge four village hours, right? So per hour, right? Or a doctor might charge 5 village hours or 6 village hours per hour. That's totally fine. Or for selling a product, you know, a $10 product, maybe that's half a village hour or a quarter of a village hour, however you want to do it. So it's divisible. And it's useful, and it's useful. You don't have to ask, you know, it's not very speculative, you know, it's not like, oh, it's not something, you know, it, in the future, if there was a buyer's market, you know, a buying order market for village hours, maybe a defined price would be established. But in the meantime, it's useful, I think. It's just a useful metric of value for, yeah.
Cool. So I want to just see, like, make sure that we're understanding this. I know I've talked
Sure.
to you about this a lot, but for people who are just hearing this for the first
Yeah.
time, basically it's like whatever you would value your time, your service, your trade, your offering for, then you just quantify that into village hours, and that's what you would trade. That's what you would put as the trade for whatever it is that you're offering.
Yep. Yeah.
And
So yeah, if you're used to
I
getting
would
paid
like,
$100 an hour, you just calculate it out.
then
So
maybe
wait,
that would be
so
like four
sorry.
village hours.
I have so many questions. This is such an important topic. Oh,
But yeah, I
go.
just want to finish what I was saying. And I think just to be really clear, like if you can give maybe one or two examples, I know that for instance, I have a book that I publish and I usually charge $33 for that, American dollars. And then so I put that on villages, and it's like, what, it's like a 2 village hours or something like that,
Sure, or one and a half. Yeah.
or 1.5, or like I put a reading, like I can put you can put like a physical service, or you can also put like a tarot reading, for instance. Oh, maybe that's like 4 village hours, or you know. And then the other thing that's cool about it is that you can also ask for things that you're looking for, so it's both for services and for needs. So like, hey, I need someone to do this and I'll pay them in village hours. Or hey, I'm a weed whacker who needs their yards weed whacked. I'll work for village hours. Like, so it kind of goes both ways. If you're trying to get a service and you want to give village hours for that service, or if you want to receive village hours and give a service, you can go either way. And something that I'm also learning about it is that you can pay someone, but then you don't necessarily need to do that trade in return with them. Like you're trading with the whole community. So like you could owe someone village hours, but that doesn't mean you owe them village hours. It just means you owe the network those hours. Like you're responsible for paying those hours back. But it doesn't necessarily mean that just because I did a trade with Heather that I need to pay her back. I just need to pay my credit back, like to the bank of the community. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. And the credits will all route through the system and balance out accordingly. So you just want to maintain that balance. You know, you want to have a zero balance, and just or if you have a negative balance, you just know you have an obligation to accept the money. And that's what makes it valuable. Just like the dollar, the reason it's valuable is because people have loans and they have the obligation to pay it back. Village hours are valuable for the same reason. People
Yeah,
yeah,
which I
send credit
really
and you have
enjoy.
the obligation.
I really enjoy that because this is the last thing I want to say, Heather, and then you can ask a question. But in our communities, there's a lot of people that want to do trades all the time. It's like, oh, I'll trade you this for that. And like oftentimes, like I don't really want to do the trade. It's like sometimes I do, but sometimes I'd rather just give or receive. And it's nice that this villages that your villages app gives you the opportunity to just give or receive and not feel like it always has to be reciprocal with that person, but knowing that in the larger network it will always be reciprocal.
Yeah,
So it opens up.
somebody wants their skills, right?
Yeah,
Somebody
exactly. It opens
wants a
up
bigger.
more opportunity to like give where you want to give and receive where you want to receive, and not just constricted to a one-on-one connection always.
Cool. Yeah,
Totally.
you pretty much like in your beautiful poetic elf way. answer the question I was going to ask, but then another question came up. So, how this is so interesting, and I, like you said, there's a learning curve. Like it's really expanding my consciousness, and I'm trying my best to wrap my mind around it, and I'm starting to kind of see a shape. Like there's like a there's a an entity forming where I'm like I can kind of see it. It's like a ghost. It's a phantom. But let's say like today, like for instance, right now I'm moving into a new place and I need $3,000 for that. Okay. What's the next step and how long does the process take for me to put my services, myself, apply for villages? And then like how long would it take for me to receive that money? Just like I would love to grind into a little bit more of those details because
Sure.
I'm genuinely curious. I'm like, this is
Yeah. So
awesome.
I'll say village hours are not, I went over the term fungible earlier, which is like the ability for you to spend the money in many different places. Like Visa, it's fungible everywhere, right? The dollar, you can get anywhere with the dollar. Villages is not so fungible yet. So, like rent with your landlord. They're in Tulum, who's never heard of it, probably no, they're not going to accept village hours, right? But if you connect with them over time, I mean, maybe they would accept some portion of rent in village hours. Or as it becomes more fungible and more popular in your community, sure, maybe they would accept all, you could pay all of your rent in village hours at some point. At this point, it's not like that. But very useful, especially for people that have highly developed trades. Maybe your friends can't afford your services, but you want to work for them. You can do half dollars, half village hours. That's really common. It's also really a popular tool for getting like new opportunities. So it's like, oh, maybe you're a housekeeper and you do the first round, the first time cleaning someone's house, you accept village hours for payment. But then it's like you end up working for them every week and you do mostly dollars, right? But it's like the gateway in the door, right? Is using this money that's not quite as useful, but it's still useful, right? Or another great use case would be like, maybe you sell produce at a farmer's market and it's like the farmer's market is almost closed, but you still have a bunch of produce left, right? That isn't going to last until next week. So you're like, oh, hey, it's end of the market. Give me your vill I accept village hours now, right? And again, those village hours aren't as fungible. They're not as useful, but they're still useful and they are a bit fungible, right? They're not as fungible, but they're still fungible, right? So it's like, so you go, okay, yeah, it's nearing the end of the market. I accept village hours now. Or maybe you have a warehouse, and you sell products, but you have overstock of a certain product, So it's like, oh, I gotta clear my shelf of these products. I don't want to just give these away or throw them in the dumpster. It's like maybe you accept village hours for this product. Right, to get it
Cool.
cleared out of the cleared off your shelf, right? Or especially for maybe organizations like say Goodwill or something or Habitat for Humanity,
I
clearing
love the
their.
word I love the word fungible. You just keep using it. Like it sounds
Oh
like such a fun word. And
yeah.
what I'm hearing is like it kind of sounds like fungi.
Right.
But like fungible what I'm just hearing is the more that we give value to systems like Villages.io, the more people that are using it, then the more fungible that money becomes, and the more valuable that it becomes. And so if we want more freedom to be able to like pay our rent in village hours by doing other things, then we need to really prioritize and like spread the word around alternative currencies and networks like villages that you've created so that we can all start to create that reality together because it takes the whole world coming together to create new systems and enough people to put value and to use these alternative resources for them to actually hold that weight and carry that value and be able to use them in ways that really benefit us.
Definitely. Yeah. And it's about individuals promoting it amongst their own networks, you know, and local organizations taking up, taking command to push it forward also.
Super interesting. The vision that I got, the visual that I got is like right now it's a multivitamin, which isn't like, you know, it's not, you can't just eat a multivitamin. You still have to eat your fruit and vegetables.
Totally.
And the ultimate goal is to like reverse that ratio to like make Villages IO like the fruits and vegetables, and then we can supplement with the dollar. So like I see where you're at and it's really exciting. And yeah, we're just about to wrap now, but like this conversation, like it's opened up a lot for me.
Yeah, like cool.
In the middle of you talking before I had the download, I'm like, wait, so my student loan that they're asking me to pay back, actually it's not even real money. And they're just like, they want me to go work.
They
for
created
it.
That money. Yeah. They created that money.
Give
for
them
you.
Money. Like it's really just kind of like putting things into.
But if you didn't pay it back, then if nobody paid back their loans, then our money wouldn't be worth anything. So, right.
Yeah.
It's like, we want to, you know, we want to keep the trust of, we want our money to keep you worth, you know, being valuable for sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
Before we wrap, I wanted to ask a question too. And I really, sure. I don't want to leave the conversation without talking all briefly about Bitcoin.
Okay.
I feel like this is like really important too. And I want to ask, you know, you were sharing growing up, kind of seeing money in this way of, oh, I want to rebel against it. It's the root of all evil. I think a lot of us were programmed with that. I know I was programmed with similar ideas. And then now, you know, you're owning a bunch of land. You seem to be doing really well for yourself. You have wealth that you've created. Mm-hmm. So how did that transition happen from living in a tent to owning your own property? And how did you get into Bitcoin? And Heather, if you need to leave too, I can just continue this conversation. That's not a problem. And how did you get into Bitcoin? And like, how would you tell other people? Yeah. Like what advice would you give to other people around that? Because there's a lot of fear around Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies in general and uncertainty. So
yeah,
I'm just really interested to hear that.
Before you answer that, I do have to hop off, but I'm so excited to listen to the rest of this conversation. And it's just like, I could talk to you for hours about this.
Yeah.
And I just want to thank you.
It's really deep stuff.
It's a doozy. Like it is doing a lot for me and it's shifting a lot. And I'm just infinitely grateful for the frequency that you hold, you know, and
yeah.
You brought today, that's really expanding the minds and hearts and possibilities of everyone in the world. So yeah, take it away with Bitcoin. I can't wait to drop about it.
And I want to say one last thing too on community currencies and network currencies in general is, once when you create a trust network, there is a realization that, the access to money that we have is not based on our individual wealth. It's like the wealth of our community, right? So it's like, you know, when you build a trust network, you realize that you have access to the wealth of your community. And it's not, if you want to create something cool, you should be able to create something cool. If you have a good reputation, you're honest, and you want to create something cool that benefits society, you should be able to.
Yeah. Mm. Love that.
Okay. Yeah, Heather, that's right.
Yeah, I love it. We are infinite creators. Okay,
Elsa,
right. A question. I'll leave you two to answer it. Thank you so much. Love you all.
Have a great day, Heather.
You as well. Enjoy the conversation around money.
So back to your question, Alfina, about how I got into Bitcoin or what it is. I found out about it during Occupy. And I guess I had heard about it. I've always been into, I'm a software developer. I've always been doing software and techie work. And I've always been really interested in platforms and technologies that help to preserve human rights and, human rights to privacy, freedom of communication, freedom of association, a right to own property. And when I learned about Bitcoin, I thought it was interesting. I learned about it during the Occupy movement. I was looking things online and I found something that said Occupy the Banks. So, oh, well, Occupy the Bank, what is this? We do a sit-in at Wells Fargo? But no, it was Occupy the Banks, like it's time to become the banks. And that's where I learned about transitive transactions that make villages happen, and where I dove deeper into the Bitcoin idea. Bitcoin I thought was very cool in that it's a tool that's censorship resistant, run by consensus. It's a decentralized platform. The rules of the money are set in stone. 21 million bitcoins only. It's a limited cap of how many Bitcoin will ever exist. And it's open source software, so anybody can read how the software works, totally transparent how the platform works, and anybody can contribute to the platform. And it offers a degree of anonymity, which guarantees our freedom, our right to own property. It can guarantee our freedom of association in that we can donate to causes that could be seen as controversial without having political conflict. You can contribute to causes without sharing your name, in political association. We saw that happen a few years ago. There was this trucker rally, and how you feel about the issue is up to you. I don't know, but like, it was during they were pushing the vaccine mandates in Canada, and there was some trucker rally, and they're like, no to vaccine mandates, and people were donating to the truckers, and they were having their bank accounts shut down, like, for donating. So it's like people are losing access to their money, and to the ability to deal with money digitally for donating to this cause. Which I,
Wow,
you know,
very.
and whatever your opinion on vaccines, I don't know, but that just was disturbing to me. And people were donating in Bitcoin, and that was the only money that was able to get through. And people that were donating Bitcoin, were not having their identities disclosed, and we're not losing access to their finances. Also in Ukraine a few years back, people were, lots of refugees, lots of people leaving their homes. And oftentimes, the only people that were able to leave with their savings were people that had their savings in Bitcoin. That's also the case for refugees all over the world, especially if you don't have an identification. You can still have digital money in Bitcoin. If you're a refugee, or let's say you're in a country where women, for example, are not allowed to have bank accounts, like most of the Islamic world, women are not allowed to have their own bank accounts. But women can privately secure their own Bitcoin and save up and, potentially what leave a bad situation. And go start a new life with a savings that, their country, their law, the laws of their country won't allow them, right, to do. But they can
Wow,
still do it
stories
using
like
Bitcoin.
this just, yeah, stories like this just really make us realize like the impermanency of what we are so securely attached to thinking is will always be there, like these big bank accounts, these big institutions and savings accounts that we
And for
put
us
our
in the
whole
United
life.
States, I mean, they're pretty reliable, but it's not like that
But
everywhere.
still,
And it could
like
change
there's
here too.
these situations where like the where our safety and security, quote unquote, could just be completely taken away from us. And so Bitcoin is an alternative where we can have more independent, more sovereign relationship with our finances is what I'm
That's
hearing.
right.
It's important because we don't really know what could happen.
That's right. Yeah, and the revolution of Bitcoin is that you don't need a bank. and you can still do digital currency. Bitcoin solved what's called the double spend problem. So like with digital technology, like you can send in, I can send an image to you and you can then send that image to 1,000 people. But how, but if I send you a dollar, you know, what stops you from sending that dollar out to 1,000 people, right? So that's called the double spend problem. And traditionally that's solved through third parties, trusted third parties, PayPal or Wells Fargo or whatever. You send your money to PayPal and then you do your transfer through PayPal, you know, and then your friend signs up for PayPal and can withdraw it, right? But Bitcoin lets you send money digitally directly from one person to another. You don't have to go through a bank. And that's so revolutionary.
Yeah, it's totally revolutionary. So then how did you go from being in a tent, rebelling against the system, to then becoming like very successful, like, you know, maybe sharing your success story with Bitcoin and why you chose to believe in Bitcoin, maybe over other currencies, other cryptocurrencies?
Oh, sure. Well, Bitcoin was the first one and other cryptocurrencies didn't exist at the time when I was exploring this stuff. But I just thought it was interesting. And honestly, like, at the time I was also into villages, you know, and into doing community currencies. My first Bitcoins, I bought on villages. So there was somebody on in my trust network who I met online, who was like, oh, I have some Bitcoins. If anybody wants to buy them for village hours. I said, oh, Bitcoin. I don't know. That's an interesting idea. I'm curious about it. Sure. I'll buy two Bitcoins from you for two village hours, right? So that ended up being like a phenomenal trade. But I'll say I actually lost those Bitcoins immediately. I sent him the wrong address somewhere. I don't know. I had the wrong address in my clipboard.
Oh, no.
I sent him the wrong address. I never got those Bitcoins. He said, oh, okay, well, just send me a new address. So, and he sent me two more Bitcoins. It wasn't a big deal. But
now that would be different. That would
right,
be a
yeah,
lot.
Yeah, now, you know, each Bitcoin's worth, I don't know, almost $70,000. That would have been, yeah, it's huge. But, you know, I traded those, what are, at the time, village hours were like 10 bucks, you know?
Wow.
So, but Bitcoin wasn't worth anything. You couldn't spend them anywhere. You couldn't, you know, there was no place secure where you could trade them. I think there was one, you know, place where you could trade Bitcoins at the time. And it was like, and they're like, give us your credit card number. And I was like, no way would I do that. Yeah, you know, like
I'm
the first
just
Bitcoin.
Like, who got that? You know, what random person just got, you know, $140,000 maybe like deposited randomly into
you know,
their
I
bank?
Think it was from a tip online. You know, it was like back then people would post their Bitcoin address and say, send me a Bitcoin tip. And it was some random, I think it was some random website. And I was like, oh, Bitcoin tips. All right. That seems like it could be a useful way to move forward in our world with the internet. So I think it was just some random website and I put there. Yeah. Anyway.
They're blessed up. You blessed them up.
Yeah. Moving forward, you know, I did end up like a year later. It's like seeing what happened to Bitcoin. It's like, oh man, maybe I will get some of these as an investment. So I did end up, purchasing, you know, working and, you know, buying some Bitcoin as an investment. And it ended up being very lucrative for me and ended up becoming a wealth that I was able to sell and purchase a home with. And I have a couple of properties that are, yeah, and other channels of income as well. But really, I try and hold my Bitcoins. I try and add more to my Bitcoin stash and savings. Bitcoin is designed more like gold. Community currencies that are designed to be spent. The dollar wants to be spent. It's inflationary. You want to spend it. You want to use it, right? Same with community currencies. It's just credit. You know, people die. People move away. People default on their credit. You want to use it. It's not something you just want to hoard and hold on to. Bitcoin, on the other hand, is designed as like a digital gold. It's designed to be a long-term store of value. generational wealth. You want to save it as long as you can because it's designed to go up in value. So you hold it and you save it for 10 years, 20 years, 50 years, 1,000 years, you know, for, you know, next generations to come. And that's its design. And I see the two as a very good complement for each other. You know, community currencies are great for spending in day-to-day use in our local community. And Bitcoin can work well as like a settlement currency. Oh, you want to settle up on your credit, you know, and it can be used to settle like credit money. Yeah.
Thanks for sharing. Do you think that the future could look like where we potentially really only need to use like a currency trading system like villages paired with a long-term investment system like Bitcoin, and that we could pretty much eliminate the dollar altogether?
Well, I mean, the dollar is so fungible and so useful across border, and people are so hooked into it. It would be disastrous to see the dollar have a collapse. So it'd be a disaster for all of us. But yeah, I mean, if need be, or in certain circumstances and certain times, that could very likely be a scenario. I'll say, like, in Switzerland, they have a very successful community currency, or zero interest business to business currency, that they've been using for almost 100 years, called the Vir. And the Vir is one of the things that the Swiss are known for their stable economy, and one of the reasons for that is the Vir. And depending on how the Swiss franc is doing on global markets, people switch back and forth, and they'll use their local business zero interest business currency, and you know, they can use it in every credit card. You go, oh, do you want to, you know, do half Vir, half francs, all francs? And depending on how the franc is doing, people will go back and forth. Yeah.
It's what I'm hearing from all of this conversation is it's nice to have a variety of currencies and ways that we can use money instead of just funneling it all into the dollar bill. Yeah. Because then the dollar bill just becomes more and more and more like necessary. There's more and more value that gets placed.
Good to have resilience. Good to have resilience.
There's only one way. But if we have multiple ways, then it kind of relieves the pressure off of one way, and it opens up more channels for giving and for receiving with currency.
Totally.
I want to address like people's fear too, because I even have fear around these alternative currencies. And well, the people are so reliant on, well, the government's safe, like not everyone. And a lot of people are skeptical.
Right.
a lot of the older generations, I would say, like my parents' generation, very much like they're very scared of, you know, Bitcoin and alternative currencies. I think a lot of it comes out of naivety, like not really understanding how they work. But then also there's a lot of volatility in these, where you can be really rich one day and then you can lose all your money the next day. So what would you tell to people who are wanting to invest in these alternative platforms, but they're scared? Like, what advice would you give them?
Well, I would say that these things are still new. They're very new, and it's understandable to be distrustful, especially with cryptocurrencies and securing wealth on your own, you know, whether it's, you know, a couple thousand dollars or hundreds of millions of dollars, securing that on your own. People are not used to that. People are used to having a bank secure their wealth for them. And that's understandable. You know, there's pros and cons to securing your own wealth. You know, somebody could come into your house, you know, they call it the $5 wrench attack. And it's like somebody buys a $5 wrench and comes over and says, hey, give me all your money, you know, and threatens to hit you with it. Like, yeah, that's especially for elders, you know, elderly. That is a serious risk and concern. And with Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies, losing your seed, that's a serious concern. People that don't feel confident securing their own wealth, you know, for a refugee that doesn't have access to banking, it's a different story, right? That's their only option. is to secure it themselves. But in 2024 in America, yeah, you might, for a lot of people, it is more secure to buy, say, a Bitcoin ETF than to have a hardware wallet and secure your own seed, you know, in a whatever, in a safe in your closet or something, or in a, you know, a safety deposit box at a bank, however you people want to do it. Or you can even memorize your seed. But then again, you know, people forget things, right? It's like there are risks to securing your own wealth for sure.
And there's rewards. It's like both and maybe it's right. Not about putting all of your eggs in one basket, but totally. Doing some here and some there and some there,
yeah.
In a way that feels balanced and safe and strategic for you.
That's right, for the individual. And I would say every individual is a little different depending on their priorities and depending on what they value. Some people, like the ability to send money anytime, day or night, as much money as they want, and to do it privately, outweighs the benefit of keeping your money in a bank, you know? And that's the primary value of Bitcoin, is that you don't need a bank to use it. It is the first digital money that has that. And I'll say on that note, you mentioned other cryptocurrencies. Other cryptocurrencies might have some value, and certainly there's markets for their value. Personally, I think Bitcoin is revolutionary with its finite cap, finite supply, and censorship resistance. It's the most secure computer network on the planet, and it's the biggest. It's not dependent on the internet to use. There's a Bitcoin satellite network and actually transmit Bitcoin transactions through radio waves. You don't need the internet to do it. And there's no other platform that has those properties. There's no other platform that is censorship resistant in that way, that is decentralized like Bitcoin is, that has a finite supply. Yeah, there's lots of other cryptocurrencies, and some of them might last the test of time, but I think most of them will not. And maybe none of them will, honestly. I don't know. We don't know. Personally, I'm a Bitcoiner. I like Bitcoin. I don't invest in other cryptocurrencies. And there could be opportunities to, you know, make a quick buck, but I think of them more like casino.
Interesting. Personally.
And you'll hear different opinions on that if you dive in.
Yeah,
but
definitely.
That's my perspective in seeing this industry for a long time. Credit is money. Credit will always work as money. Yeah, Bitcoin is more like gold. It's like more like a gold mine. So, and yeah, traditional investments, like, you know, stocks and investing in companies, those are all real and worthwhile investments. But most cryptocurrencies are pretty sketchy, honestly.
Okay. So what I'm hearing is that what makes it different, Bitcoin, is that it's a finite amount of Bitcoin. Mm-hmm. Are the other cryptocurrencies not finite?
Because I thought that the that whole are, point of...
Okay.
But
I thought that the whole
changed.
Point of that was that it was decentralized and finite versus the banking system, which is not decentralized, and they could just continue right. to create
Most
more.
Most of the other cryptocurrencies are not very decentralized, and they don't have clear caps, or they have like things like pre-sales, or, you know, and I mean, Bitcoin is the biggest. It's got the strongest network, and it's, you can do, you know, they talk about smart contracts or things like that, you know, that you can do on these other platforms, but you can do all that on Bitcoin. I personally don't see a reason for other. What we need is a strong, secure digital store of value. And Bitcoin supplies that. That you might hear Web3 things about Web3, things like that. But a lot of it is just hype, like venture capitalist hype, and not really, you know, you look at from a technological side, it doesn't add much value to the internet or society.
Interesting. So you
Yeah.
think that the whole world, we only really need one solid, like, alternative, digital currency like Bitcoin? We don't really need a bunch. We just need one that
Yeah.
really works.
Yeah.
And then
Yeah.
you think everyone will be able to benefit from that since it is a finite amount of Bitcoin. How would
Yep.
everyone be able to benefit from that if they can't get into the Bitcoin in time?
Oh, it's divisible. So you can send 0.00001 Bitcoin. You can send a dollar. You can send a dollar worth of Bitcoin, or a penny, or a fraction of a penny. Honestly,
Sure.
there's people online right now sending fractions of pennies for
So
different.
anyone can buy in, but I guess what
Yeah.
I'm saying is if people don't buy in and then all of the Bitcoin is bought, then where is their opportunity for them to be in that digital
Although
network?
there'll always be people buying and selling fractions of coins. Yeah. Always be people that want services, you know. If, for example, we had we call it a hyper Bitcoinization, where everything was all of a sudden valued in Bitcoin and everything was priced in Bitcoin. Yeah, there would be it would probably be credits, but it would be more like the money is backed by Bitcoin, like the dollar is backed by Bitcoin. You go to a bank, and instead of using land and your job dependability as collateral, you use your Bitcoin as collateral, and they would issue you a loan, ultimately backed by Bitcoin. But I think it's high potential that most loans will go in that direction in the future, because it's just so much easier and better for banks and for issuers. Instead of having a house as collateral that, has squatters and maintenance fees, and you have to sell it, and I don't know, and it could burn down, all this, all these risks. It's like, if you got Bitcoin just stashed in there as collateral, that's way easier for any institution to issue a loan backed by, honestly. So I think there's a high potential that most money will be backed by Bitcoin in the future.
Interesting.
Because
Well, I
again,
feel like it could.
money is credit, right? Bitcoin is a store of value. Bitcoin is not really good money, but it could be the backing of lots of money.
Well, I'm really grateful for this conversation and just to know you and learn all of this because this is definitely not stuff that we're really taught about.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of misinformation and like different information that we're hearing of like this is good, this is bad, try this, don't do that. Ultimately we have to trust our intuition and follow what feels right for us. But it feels a lot clearer to me after this conversation that it's really about having a balanced approach and seeing that there's pros and cons of all these different types of currencies and perhaps having a more integrative approach to business, money and currency is maybe the best approach versus pigeonholing
Definitely.
ourselves. And
Yeah.
so I feel really optimistic from this conversation and excited for what we can create. And I'm feeling a lot more empowered to like that I'm the creator of my of money. Like money works for me. And
Yeah.
I don't I'm not just a slave to it. I get to create it. And that feels really exciting. And there's all sorts of new ways to be a part of that trailblazing. So thank you
Yeah.
so much for coming on and
Yeah,
sharing
thanks for having me.
your wealth of knowledge and experience. And I'm sure that people listening are just like, whoa, having so many light bulbs and aha moments. I wanna, before we wrap, I wanna give you the opportunity to share how people can be connected to you and your offerings, whether they want to
Thank
join
you.
villages or they want to maybe get a consultation from you around Bitcoin, which I highly recommend. He's incredible. This is my partner. He helped me set up my own wallet with my Bitcoin, with my own sovereign finances that I have, complete control over. And that was something that felt really scary and overwhelming for me. But I feel like the process of just working with you, Han, it's just like really demystified and helped me to feel more sovereign and empowered around my finances. So yeah, he is amazing at helping you if you're on that journey of you want to invest in Bitcoin, you want to have some of your own finances outside of just institutional banks and savings account, but you don't really know how to do it, you're feeling unsure, like I would definitely recommend connecting with him and he can take you on that journey. So yeah, what's the best way for people to do that?
Sure. So whether it's onboarding, like if you're brand new to Bitcoin and you want to learn, figure out how to buy it, how to secure it yourself, or you need technical support, recovering, you know, Bitcoin keys, I do all that kind of stuff. Or if you just want to dive in and have a deep discussion, you know, consultation and, you know, understand it more, I'm available for all that kind of stuff. You can find me on Instagram or all the social networks, or dnalevity.com is my website. It's same on social networks. You can also find me, villages.io is our website, and our Instagram, and all that. You find me online. You know, I wanted to say also, download the app, villages.io. Set up an account, make a profile, add me to your trust network. I'll add you to my trust network, and get you started. Yeah. You know, just add me, connect to me. I'll get you in there. I'll give you a little bit of trust to get you started, you know, and yeah, you can even use Village Hours to pay for a Bitcoin consultation, you know.
Awesome. And we'll link all these in the description below as well.
Thank you.
But yeah, thank you again for coming on. This is such an incredible portal opening for this topic of money and churning so many wheels. And thank you, each and every one of you, for tuning into this episode of Taboo Talks. We wouldn't be here without you. I'm really interested to hear what you guys have to say around this episode. So please comment below. Like the video if it inspired you, share it with your network, especially around this Villages. It's so important to share this with our friends and our community. So please share this episode with you. Keep this conversation going, because it's really important that we're having conversations like this. This is what creates revolutions and what really liberates us from these shackles of collective suffering around money that we've been in for so long. So yeah, catch more episodes of Taboo Talks on our YouTube, cissociety.world, on our Instagram. We also have all our episodes on Spotify and Apple Podcasts as well. And we'll be back with you next week for another juicy episode, different perspective, different voice, but same topic on money. And we look forward to seeing you then.
Thank you.